Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Well, happy Monday to everybody. This is Dave Lincoln. It's good to have you on the program. It is Monday, January 18th. For those of you that are watching this on podcast and trying to figure out which program you're on, it's the 18th, and we've got a great program today. We've got a special guest, Mercy Jimenez, and I tell you, you're going to be getting some information on what's happening and developing in the secondary market that's going to be significant, I think, to our future. So you're going to want to stay tuned all the way through this broadcast. But each week, we start off at the top of the program with an update on rates. Joe Farr, thank you so much.
Hi, Dave.
And what's going on? I know the markets are closed today, Joe.
I'll be pretty good today. I'll tell you what's going to happen.
Everyone's having an extra latte or a coffee.
Yeah. No, it's you're right. The MLK Day markets are closed. So we can talk a little bit about last week and then maybe what's coming up. But, last 2 weeks or so far this year in 2010, we've seen mortgage rates fall each week. And, the last week a little more so than the week prior, but all in all about 15, 20 basis points lower than where we ended 2009. Last week we saw a couple reasons for that. The retail sales numbers came in lower than expected. Now, November's numbers were revised a little bit to almost offset that, but the December being so much lower than expected was a bit of a surprise, and the jobless claims came in a little higher than expected. Both of those showing weakness in the economy, and as we've talked about in the past, it's kind of a time when people are paying attention to what direction the economy is taking. So every little bit of information seems to tell people something about future inflation and interest rates. But as far as inflation goes, boy, what we're seeing right now is just next to nothing. Core CPI was released this week at a plus 0.1% for the month and 1.8% for the year, so it's well within the good range. And
yes.
But we have talked about, and I think there's a lot of discussion out there about whether or not we can keep this low rate of inflation with all the stimulus money that's been put in the marketplace. And the answer is not without a great deal of care and good moves on the part of the Fed. And it's just going to be very difficult to extract the money supply in time to, forego long-term inflation. So
absolutely.
Yeah, not so much in the short run. It's very tame, but still concerns in the long run.
Treasury auctions, what's going on in that?
Always a concern that someday people are going to say, I've got enough of this stuff. And, China started to hint at it over time. They have kind of expressed concerns about the monetary policy of the U.S. government and should they continue buying treasuries. Well, they did, and they are, and they probably will. But anytime they start hinting around at changes, it's concerning. This week, we saw 10-year and 30-year auctions be very well received. Demand was strong. Yield requirements were pretty much on par with where the market was. And so that kind of bleeds over into the mortgage market because it's sending a signal that there are investors out there that are willing to take long-term interest rate risk and bet that future inflation is not going to be too concerning for them. So we saw both, weakness in the economic announcements that came out plus a strong Treasury auction, both very good for mortgage rates last week. This week, one day's behind us now because the markets are closed. We have a couple minor things this week. not, you know, PPI comes out, which is also an inflation measure. CPI is the more important of the two inflation measures. Couple home, single family housing starts will come out, as well as the Philly Fed and a couple other things. But big thing is going to be the week after next when the Fed meeting comes up. Fed meeting will be Tuesday and Wednesday. What's that, the 26th and 27th? And everyone is, I shouldn't say everyone, there's a great deal of question about whether or not the Fed can afford, or the Treasury can afford, their to stop their MBS purchases. Is the economy still too fragile? If they do, and if interest rates go up, so each of the next two Fed meetings, the last two before March 31st, when the program's due to end, are going to be looked upon very intently from the mortgage by the mortgage industry to determine, are they or are they not? You know, they say they're not, but can they quit? You know,
it's one of those things. I mean, it's kind of like someone that has a drug problem. You know what? You want to get off it, but you're not sure that you want to endure the pain that goes through what this is going to bring about if they do put a screeching halt to that. And we've already watched, Joe, housing starts. And the information, Alice has got some interesting statistics we're going to talk about here in one of the next upcoming segments about how FHA volume is off. And why is that? Because of the stimulus that looked like they were going to drop away. So anyway, this week, we got housing start data again this week, and then the jobless claims, and like you said, so there's we've got some things to watch this week, but this seems like it's going to be a little bit of a, it's not a lot of big news here.
No, just this will be kind of a quiet week, and when you talk about being addicted, the mortgage industry is pretty well addicted right now to, you know, the government intervention on the home purchases, as well as on the mortgage rates and keeping mortgage rates low, so. The 26th and 27th will be the date of their announcement, and boy, every word they write is going to be highly scrutinized.
Highly scrutinized. Well, I tell you, Joe, thank you so much for bringing this to us. And each week, as you do, we get a lot of feedback. In fact, we just got a couple of tweets in. Well, in fact, we'll bring it up in the next commentary. If you want to bring us your information, want us to ask questions while we're on the program, please email me at D as in David, LYKKEN at mortgagebankingsolutions.com. We'll get your questions on the air, or you can tweet us, or you can do LinkedIn. We got most of the social faces, the electronic media out there to receive your questions. You bring it to us, we'll get it on there. Joe, thank you so much. We'll be right back after this word with Lickin' on Lending.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you back, everybody. Again, we have an important guest, an exciting guest to come up. I mean, we're excited about all the guests we have on the program, but today is one that I'm really excited about. And I think I'm going to be there making as many notes, learning what we're talking about when you talk about the securitizations and bond market and what's the future hold there. So you would definitely want to stay tuned for the next segment that's coming up here with Mercy Jimenez, our special guest. But Rad, back as we are every week, we're going to talk about the legislative update. Alice Alvey, it's so good to be with you in Detroit last week. Give us an update on what's going on.
Yep, here's the traffic report, and as expected, for a holiday, traffic's a little light, right? So, but we do want to make sure,
report.
Right? You just want to make sure everybody's got the list that we're watching. So, the two big things is the Home Secure Credit, Regulation Z, the comment period has expired. They're sifting through the comments now. About 4,000 comments went in. This is the piece that has a statement in it that would restrict compensation to loan officers and prohibit that it's based on the terms of the loan. So this is the one that has those parts in it that are very concerning. There are some other parts, certainly, that we have to be concerned about is in that one, especially the concept that all closing costs would be calculated within the finance charge to calculate the APR. That has some significant snowballing impact, so we're watching that one. The Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act of 2009, that's House Bill 4173 that passed the House. Obviously, nothing's going to happen until the Senate gets back tomorrow, and they're probably going to focus on health care for a bit, so we're not sure how much movement this will get in the coming weeks. But this is the piece that has the would a lender be required to retain 5% of a loan, and depending on what types of loans. So having mercy on the show this week is going to be great to talk a little bit more about some of those options. And then FHA lender approval requirements is getting a lot of press this week. People are now trying to dissect all the comments that came in to try and see, okay, where is FHA going to lean on this for the lender approval requirements? A lot of the comments were that HUD went too far. Even NAMB said, did they go too far? We really need to look at trying to strike a balance between maybe dual responsibilities between FHA and wholesalers. But I don't know. A lot of talk is about there that they just can't afford the overhead and they need to put lenders responsible for the brokers and the loans they purchase. The SAFE Act comment period is open on that until February 16th. So for banks, this is an issue because HUD is proposing that the banks should have their loan officers subject to licensing requirements. So that's the hot news, what's on the list that we're watching right now. We have some implementation date reminders out there for everybody. Watch for HUD enforcement of RESPA beginning April 1st. We'll talk more about RESPA in our hot topics.
We have so much. Thank you, Alice, as you do, bringing us all this information and the time you spend digesting it. We have so many guests going, you know what, it's the most complete source of updates of what's going on in the industry. Thank you so much. And my only concern is what's going to happen to your speaking your calendar. Are we going to be able to keep you on the program? We absolutely will.
Oh, you guys are always my priority. This is a fun way to keep people updated.
Well, we appreciate it so much. We'll be right back after this word. Stay tuned for more on Lickin' on Lending.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Good to have you back with us again. We want to say thank you and acknowledgement to Blog Talk Radio. It makes this all possible through the miracle of the Internet. What? Gosh, remember the days you used to go to the library and look something up? But when you had to research thing, you had to pull some book off? Now everyone's jumping to their favorite search engine and doing the research. And I tell you, it's amazing. One of the things that happened last week that I want to talk about, just a very brief way, and it's a segue into where we're going next with Mercy. But I'll tell you, I was back in Detroit meeting with clients, a number of clients. I had 7 meetings in 2 days. It was a very busy week. One of the meetings we were able to fit in was we sat down and met with Senator Carl Levin's senior staff. Carl could not be there. Senator Levin's could not be there. He's come flying back from Afghanistan. But we were talking about the skin in the game feature. I'll tell you, this could be the single biggest game changer for our industry. And while it seems like we have so many issues out there that are game changers, this one could be a huge one for us. And Joe, I know we've been talking about that a lot off on our pre-program, but it seems to be a great segue into our next guest. And would you please introduce her for us?
Well, yeah, I'd like to just throw out there that the secondary market that we have utilized in the last 10, 15, 20 years has been a very efficient, very cost-reducing method of delivering mortgages to investors. But all that's subject to change. You know, we have Fannie Mae, we have Freddie Mac that have been the lion's share of the secondary market for our originations. And, you know, they're in conservatorship. Something's got to happen to Fannie and Freddie. And what might happen...
Absolutely.
What might happen is that they're no longer allowed to issue government-guaranteed or implied even government-guaranteed mortgage-backed securities. And so imagine what happens to the origination channel of the mortgage industry if there is not a way to deliver the loans that you make into the secondary market via MBS or via whatever. And so, it's not... That's not a scenario that's too terribly hard to expect to come along. Now, will it be in 12 months? Will it be in 24 months? I don't know. I don't think it's going to be this year, certainly. But there's going to be a time when we are going to be asked to change some of the ways that we deliver loans into the secondary market. And one of those ways is what we're here to talk about today. It's called a covered bond, and no one in the United States is better suited to tell you about covered bonds than the lady we have here. Mercy Jimenez is the co-founder of the Covered Bond Investor and is the most outspoken advocate for covered bonds in the United States today. So, Mercy, I welcome you on our show.
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure to be here.
And with that, there's so many of us, myself included, that had never even heard of covered bonds. 3 or 4 months ago, can you kind of compare and contrast covered bonds to something we're very familiar with, mortgage-backed securities?
Sure, Joe. You're certainly not alone in not knowing much. Unless you're on the other side of the Atlantic, you've probably never heard about a covered bond. It's really basically a debt instrument that sits on balance sheet for financial institutions. They are often structured as a bullet bond, and all I mean by that is it's not like an MBS where P&I are going back to the investor on a regular basis. It's often structured so that the investor is getting interest on schedule, and then at the end of the term, their principal goes back. They tend to be longer-term bonds, traditionally 7-10-year bonds. During the crisis, they tended to have shorter maturities just because everyone was so nervous. They're very high-quality asset-backed bonds. They tend to be AAA, and finally, I would tell you, as far as I know, there's never been a default on one. Having been in the MBS world so long, I would highlight to your listeners that the biggest differences are there is no prepay risk to speak of on a covered bond, and that's because the assets sit in a dynamic cover pool. All that means is if a loan goes bad, the issuer needs to replace it with a good loan. And they often have high over-collateralization. From the investor's point of view, it's a very conservative and safe bond because they have dual recourse, not only to the collateral, but also to the issuing institution.
So, Mercy, it's kind of like a treasury note in that it's a fixed rate, and you get paid interest over time, and you get your principal at a specific point in time.
That's right, Joe. That's right. And I also didn't say these are not government subsidized or government guaranteed.
Right.
That's another big difference.
Which I think is one reason why we need to be thinking about them, because it sure seems like we're going to move in that direction. The other thing that from a mortgage perspective, if I'm hearing this right, is that the collateral behind a covered bond is a lot like MBS in that there are lots of mortgages, lots of independent mortgages that make up the collateral behind that bond. And you mentioned there's no prepayment risk, but there's also, or what is the risk of repayment to a covered bond investor?
Yeah, there isn't. If a loan gets prepaid that's in the cover pool, the issuer needs to replace it with another loan, and that's why these are structured as bullet bonds. So you can imagine the investor is one who tends to be a rate investor. They want a steady stream on interest. They want to know that they don't have to manage prepay risk, and they want to know that they not only have quality assets that are constantly being replenished if there's a valuation issue, but they can also turn to the issuer in the event of a default.
So, Mercy, who you mentioned on balance sheet, who would you say then are going to be the issuers of covered bonds? Are they going to be the big banks only?
That's a great question, Joe. By my count, about 40% of mortgage debt outstanding never made its way into an MBS. So there's a lot of, there are many whole loans sitting on lenders' balance sheets today, be they middle market players, smaller community banks, certainly credit unions that traditionally have loved to keep loans on balance sheet. I think that the larger lenders will feel more comfortable in this new space because two of these bonds were issued back in 06 and 07. It was WaMu, those bonds are now with Chase, as well as Bank of America's bonds. And so we may see issuance from the large lenders who start to define the market, but I would tell you that I think there's a really large opportunity for the mid-tier and smaller lenders.
Because they need the liquidity, right?
Absolutely, Joe. diversified funding sources helps everyone. It drives rates down anytime your options are limited. You and I know what happens to rates.
Yeah.
Mercy, I can jump in here. I'm monitoring the questions as they get emailed in here. One of the questions is, I'm an independent mortgage banker. I own my own mortgage company. What does my balance sheet have to be at to be able to participate in a covered bond program, and what are my first steps? So the first question is, has to do with how big does their balance sheet have to be? Number two is, if they're big enough, how do they get involved? And I'm sure they'd love to hear about how you can help them.
That's a very good question. Actually, for smaller lenders, there's a model in Europe very much used in Spain where you can have a multi-issuer covered bond. And what that means is a group of four or five mid-tier or smaller lenders get together. They agree on common parameters of the loans that go into the cover pool, and then they are able to issue a larger bond. In Europe, bonds that are a billion or more, as you might imagine, in UPB, have higher liquidity. And so it's very important for a smaller lender to be able to count on that kind of, ability to benefit from the better rates and the higher liquidity. So the answer is you could be a small balance sheet lender, theoretically, once the legislation is passed, and it could allow you with a group of other lenders to issue a covered bond through a central vehicle. Does that help?
Yeah, that helps. He shot back as you were saying, says, that's good, that's helpful. My net worth is $2.5 million. Let me be specific. Can I get involved in a covered bond program? Or do I have to do it on a participation basis?
That probably the best vehicle for a small lender that has a small balance sheet would be to sell to an issuer who has a slightly larger balance sheet. And then as they grow, they would be in a position to be a part of the issuance.
Okay, very good. That is helpful. So, I mean,
We got another someone emailing in, says my balance sheet is substantially greater. I think where everyone's trying to get to, is there a dollar amount that you would say that there is a threshold that you, below this you need to participate, above this you can do this on your own. Is there a threshold there, or some range or general threshold without painting yourself into a corner, Mercy?
Yeah, the perspective I need to provide here, Joe, is that this is all theoretical because we don't yet have the legislation in the U.S. That will define many of these parameters. But theoretically, if we look at what's happened in Europe, they do try to issue $1 billion level bonds because of the liquidity. And what I've observed is that when you have small players getting bound together in a multi-issuer covered bond, you may have as few as four or as many as seven or eight. So I think that it gives you a theoretical basis on the kind of volume that might be required.
Well, Mercy, you mentioned the legislation. A couple things come to mind. I did see where the NBA has identified covered bonds as being on their agenda for this year, and there is some legislation pending regarding covered bonds. Could you give us a little update on those?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I really want to take this moment, Joe, to invite any of your listeners to join in on a free webcast that we have taking place January 29th, Friday the 29th at 1 p.m., and they can go on our online at coveredbondinvestor.com and sign up, register free. The MBA, as well as the National Association of Realtors, are both collaborators in this webcast, but there's a very strong panel of experts, including our neighbors to the north. The Canadians have been issuing covered bonds for some time, and I think we have a lot to learn from them. But if you look at the legislation currently that's out there, which is H.R. 2896, it was introduced in the House by Representatives Garrett and Kanjorski. It's a little dated, even though that's the bill that's actually out there, because Congressman Garrett introduced a draft amendment to that legislation, which went as far as it needed to create a viable market in the U.S. And it is quite specific on the asset classes that can be used. It specifies the U.S. Treasury as the regulator. It defines the legal structure, Joe, that is so necessary to get U.S. investors interested in this vehicle. Until we have that legal structure, we simply are not going to be able to compete with the strong issuance occurring in Europe.
It would seem, Mercy, like that there'd be almost nobody that would be against forming this kind of alternative, given that there is skin in the game by those issuing the bonds, and given the reliance on MBS, government-guaranteed MBS in the marketplace. Are you seeing any opposition to creation of this?
Actually, that's a very astute point, Joe. Last month, Chairman Barney Frank held a hearing on covered bonds, and we covered that, if anyone wants to read about that, at coveredbondinvestor.com. What was most striking to me sitting in that hearing was how strong the support was on both sides of the aisle. Chairman Frank called covered bonds a really good idea, and all the testimonies, both Republicans and Democrats, was, we've got to get this right because this is a really important tool to supplement securitizations. Understand, no one is saying this is going to take over securitizations, and I think SIFMA said it right very early on, this is a great supplementary tool for funding. In Europe, mortgages are funded by covered bonds to the tune of 16 or 18%. So this is not going to replace 100% of securitizations, but the more options we have, the better the rates, the better the rates, the healthier lenders will be, and the better mortgage options the consumer will have.
Mercy, you mentioned that the seminar or webinar you're having on the, what, the 29th?
That's right.
Is partially sponsored by the realtors. And
yes.
I want to point out the obvious. There's a great reason why the realtors are interested in helping promote covered bonds.
That's right. I mean, it helps,
called liquidity.
It helps liquidity.
Absolutely.
And both the MBA and NAR have really been quite supportive. But the other sponsors, Joe, just so everyone knows how mainstream a thinking this is, one of the most, well-known law firms in this arena, Morrison and Forster, will be on the panel. We have Clayton Holdings. We have Price Waterhouse as a sponsor. And of course, it's being hosted, I should say, by the VDP, which is Germany's Association of Pfandbrief Banks, and the Germans have the gold standard on covered bonds, so we have a lot to learn from them.
Well, I tell you, Mercy, we're going to take a quick break, but I want you to stay on the line because we're going to continue on with this important discussion. It is so good to have you here and to hear that this is actually, folks, listeners, this is the first real positive news that's coming out of that should be encouraging you to stay involved in this industry. And there is hope for this liquidity crisis we're in. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Lickin' on Lending
in
and this
climate,
important information.
Quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
Thank you so much for staying with us. It's not too hard to stay tuned in on this program. Mercy, I got to speak in Spain, in Madrid, a couple years ago, and met the whole group that is that runs the securitization there, and it was just so fascinating. It seems like they're so much further ahead of us. We've been so reliant on the programs that we've had that, you know, we sometimes wonder if the bad news that we're digesting is all bad. Sometimes these kind of changes that are hitting market actually bring about some really positive change, and it's regrettable that we've had to go through the kind of pain we've had to go to bring about the change. But this is very encouraging. Let's continue on to this discussion. Appreciate you being here as a guest, and we are getting slammed with a lot of questions. We really want to keep going with the interview that Joe has underway here. So, Joe, turn it back to you.
Well, one of the benefits to what we have grown accustomed to is a great amount of consistency. Everyone deals with Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac guidelines, and we've come a long way in creating consistency from the days when everyone sold to private investors. Different underwriting guidelines, different documentation requirements. So, Mercy, I guess the question is, in the covered bond world, will we revert from an origination perspective back to something like what we did, 20 years ago, where everyone issuing a covered bond had a different set of guidelines?
Oh, let's hope not, Joe.
Yeah.
I remember when I was at Chase Mortgage having thousands of private investors to look at. So let's hope that's not where we end up. My best projection would be that if the legislation passes, that will define a lot of the structure and drive much of the consistency. The first few successful large issuers, I think, will also help fill in the gaps. But if this product does not have great definition and structure, then we will miss the boat, because I guarantee you the Europeans have that kind of defined structure. In fact, I'd like to return to a comment that David made a little earlier when he was reminiscing on his visit to Spain, and say that if the U.S. continues dragging its feet on covered bonds, I am of the opinion that foreign investors will, as they have in the past, continue in the future to bring their foreign covered bonds to the U.S. investor. It happened during 07. It didn't keep happening when the financial meltdown occurred, but several foreign issuers have already requested exemptions from the SEC that allows them to market it to U.S. investors. And just last week, a German publication said that it was rumored another was ready to issue U.S. dollar covered bonds to pitch to U.S. investors. So my point is, we've got to get the consistency right or we won't get the volume, and I certainly hope it won't be about, thousands of structures. And secondly, I have a great sense of urgency on this, because if it doesn't happen quickly, others will appeal to the U.S. investor.
Marcia, the description of the covered bond and the yield that the investor buying a covered bond will require is sort of the basis of my next question, because it sounds a little bit like a treasury, which if you compare 10-year treasury yields to mortgage yields right now, it's substantially less, but at the same time it doesn't have the U.S. government. So my question to you is, in today's environment, if we were selling, if covered bonds were being used to finance mortgages versus what we have today, the MBS, would the mortgage rates on the loans going into those be higher or lower? How much higher? Do you have a sense of that?
Yes. Very, very important, I think, here to look at what's happened in Europe, and then I'll respond very directly to your question, Joe. Anyone who's interested in seeing what's happened to mortgage rates among the 25 European countries that issue covered bonds, there's a great free, very large book called the European Covered Bond Council Handbook. You can get access to it through coveredbondinvestor.com. And you will see that although the rates have been a little higher than the U.S. because these are not subsidized rates, they are very much in the ballpark. And what's happened in terms of issuance in Europe is that the yield is so driven by the asset class and whether the country in which the lender is issuing actually has a legal structure or not. And really all I mean by that is that the yields are across a very wide range. I can tell you that at one extreme, I saw an issuance out of South Korea. Koopman Bank issued covered bonds for their credit card receivables, and it had about a 500 basis point spread over mid swaps. At the other end of the spectrum, if you look at the gold standard of covered bonds, filled with a lot of mortgages in it, coming out of some of the German banks. Looking at 20 basis points over mid-swaps is common. So historically, covered bonds have yields have been somewhere between a subsidized GSE rate and unsecured bank debt yields. And that range has been between 20 and 100 basis points lower than unsecured bank debt.
Yeah, so without the government guarantee, and you know, we've talked about that there's a push somewhere along the way for the mortgage industry to stop relying on that government guarantee. This may be a way to keep rates lower than they would be otherwise, because it is an over-collateralized safe investment for the investor community to take our mortgages.
I think you're absolutely right, Joe, and I think the lenders that would be the first takers, if you will, are likely to be the lenders that already have these loans on balance sheet, because they are not going to take an additional capital hit, and they could find cost-efficient funding off of the loans they already have.
Mercy, someone just emailed me who, it was the Eurocatalyst event I spoke at over there, and someone says, isn't the Spanish money, the Spain real estate market in the toilet, and can covered bonds contribute to that, or is this independent of it?
Very good question. I only know so much about the Spanish market, but I know enough to know that real estate values have been depreciating close to 50%. Remember what I said earlier about covered bonds being a very small portion of the total mortgage market funding. So if on average it's 16 to 18%, I don't think we can begin to ascribe the problems to covered bonds in Spain. What
I will say
is this, we haven't yet seen a covered bond default, okay, because
wow.
The way they are structured, the issuer needs to keep adding over collateralization. The issuer needs to keep replacing covered bonds, replacing a loan that's defaulted in the cover pool. Now, that's not to say it won't happen, but there are so many incentives for the issuer to keep the integrity of that structure, David. And so
yep.
I think that's very important to bear in mind.
Is that where the term covered bonds, we're getting a lot of questions, and I know when you start talking about mid-swaps and things like that, people's eyes glaze over, because the average person that's running an independent mortgage company and the average originator has absolutely no clue, Mercy, when you're talking mid-swaps. So I know we have enough people who do understand it listening on the program, so I want to not back off of that, but I want to break it down a little bit. When you say a covered bond, is it because people, I mean, those that are participating or creating the bond are actually going in, and when a loan goes delinquent, they're going in and covering it again with another loan? Is that where the term covered bond, what's the genesis of the name covered bond? Can you give a little insights into that?
Yes. I mean, that's a very good basic question and understanding. Remember, the cover pool, okay, is a segregated bucket of assets. So number one, it's segregated for that investor. That's very different from asset-backed securities, especially on the PLS side. These assets are separate, distinct, cannot be touched in the event of default. And so the investor, I like to say, is covered with their bond in two ways. They are covered by the collateral that's sitting in that segregated bucket, and they are also covered by the issuer in the event of a default. And so coverage is really, much higher than what you would see in other type of bonds that don't have the separate and distinct assets. And I would say not to mention the fact that the quality has to stay where it started. This is not about deteriorating assets. This is about, you know, high quality assets that stay high quality. And it's really why it's so relevant to the topic you were talking about earlier about skin in the game, because you're not originating to distribute as a covered bond issuer. You're originating to retain. All
Good.
Of that adds a lot of comfort to the bond investors.
Yes, it
hey,
would.
Mercy, real quick, in the cash flows, as somebody that, let's say a loan that's in the covered pool, you know, it's been designated by the issuer and is in the, is the collateral for the bond, pays off. Do you have to segregate that cash, or can you go reinvest that cash in another mortgage and put that other mortgage in the collateral pool?
Yeah, actually, everything is quite segregated. You know, I will say that there have been some tweaks to the covered bond structure, especially coming out of the UK, where they have issued some pass-throughs where it actually starts to look a lot more like an MBS. But outside of that, those kinds of exceptions, you have a separate specified investment provider who is actually reinvesting any proceeds that are not getting paid out to the bondholder, because at the end of the 5-year term or the 7-year term, we have to make sure that there's enough principal to pay out the bondholder. So all the cash flows are quite segregated. And in fact, the assets are looked at on a very regular basis. There are asset monitors that are constantly looking at the valuation and the quality of these assets.
Alice, you have been so quiet.
I know, I've been sitting on my hands here waiting for a chance to jump in.
There's so much information we could go through, but I know so many people say, why is Alice so quiet? I know she's got some intelligent questions.
I was just saying, because I know I didn't know if you wanted to go through the emails, but, you know, just to your last point, Mercy, that you were going through, the whole concept of, you know, why now, I think you've helped clarify that. That was one of my biggest questions. You know, we lived on MBS for so long, and why didn't covered bonds come out in the past for us? And I think you just described it there, just the idea of the MBS gave us some flexibility. This does seem to lock investors down a little bit. I mean, you have to look at yourself as being permanently in this bond. And so if you need some liquidity, you know, to the sale of servicing or so forth, I'm not sure how that side of it works.
That's a very good observation, Alice, and that's why you don't see countries funding mortgages with 100% covered bonds.
Yeah.
It's one more tool, and it's a tool often used by the lender who was going to keep the loan on their balance sheet anyway, and therefore would find this cost-effective funding to be a nice supplement to what they already use, whether that be unsecured bank debt or a securitization instrument.
Who would regulate this? You know, if you say it's got to be written, and now we're going to end up with potentially multiple different types of underwriting criteria, I can't imagine they all end up on the same page, but hopefully they're close, you know, then who regulates this?
Go ahead, Mercy. Can we hold that question real fast? We're going to take a quick break. Alice, I'm so glad you're in here, and we're getting flooded with emails on here. So let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. And Mercy, thank you so much for being on the program. Wow,
this is a lot of
feedback. Hold on, we'll be right back.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line, or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact our Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back. This is Dave Licken with Licken on Lending. We have got ourselves one hot, great topic here, talking about the future of the mortgage industry and its covered bonds. Alice, you were asking a question. Could you re-ask that? I'm sorry for being so rude to interrupt that, but we had to fit in that word.
Oh, no. Got to get those sponsors in there. Hey, yeah. You know, I guess my question, I mean, obviously the SEC, you have them as a regulator, but, you know, we're used to MBS and the standardization of working with Fannie and Freddie, and they, in a sense, audit us. So, you know, if I'm someone who wants to get into this, I'm sure there's going to be another layer of someone else watching over me, and who potentially would that be?
Yes, you're anticipating the proposed amendment to the legislation, Alice. It does propose the U.S. Treasury as the regulator and having ongoing oversight, and the proposed amendment gets into many specifics about who does what in the event of a default, because to your point, if it's an FDIC-insured institution, obviously they will be involved. And by the way, I'm sure some of your listeners know that in the middle of the of 2008, the FDIC did issue some guidelines for covered bonds. Obviously, it is not related to the legislation that and the amendment that was recently proposed. But it was a way of saying, if some of you want to issue the way WAMU did or the way B of A did, here's what we're going to do to help you. And the FDIC actually took several steps in that direction, including reducing the stay period of getting access to the assets in the event of a default, so that the trustee would not have to be in line for 90 days, but could do it in 10 days. So the FDIC has some guidelines. They will likely be updated if the legislation is passed. But the proposal from Congressman Garrett and Congressman Kanjorski does propose the U.S. Treasury as the regulator and overseer.
And then I think we've talked a little bit, too, about kind of how would this compete with what the Federal Home Loan Banks are offering.
Yes, and, you know, here the discussions I often have with balance sheet lenders who have relied, and successfully so, on lines from the Federal Home Loan Banks, I'm rather straight up on the topic. I like to say, if you believe that your economic equation with the Federal Home Loan Banks is always going to be the same, meaning your dividends will never get cut, meaning you're never going to be asked for more capital infusion, then you probably don't have to think about covered bonds. If the world's not going to change, forget it, because that's a good deal, and their bonds have some kind of implied guarantee as well. So covered bonds won't compete with the status quo, so to speak. But if any of those are questions in your mind, medium term, then having an alternative to the lines at the Federal Home Loan Bank, having an alternative to the GSEs, makes a lot of sense. And finally, I would remind those that maybe have forgotten, WAMU was the first covered bond issuer in the U.S. in 2006. The reason it became such a point of urgency for them, because it was at the point that their dividends from the Federal Home Loan Bank were at risk, and they suddenly realized, I better be looking at alternatives long term. So those are the reasons why I think your listeners need to think about supporting this as a supplement to what's already in the marketplace.
This is just, it is so interesting. And let me just get to some of the emails that have rolled in here. Mercy, one of them says, I'm an originator. I'm fascinated by this. It brings me a great deal of hope, but I feel like a complete idiot when I'm listening to you guys talk about this. Where can I learn more? Where are the basics? Where's the primer on covered bonds?
Well, I would say to you, there's no better place than our online publication, which is completely free. You don't even have to register to get on there. It's coveredbondinvestor.com. And not only do we have the latest news and analysis updated there, but there's a whole section on the homepage that you'll see about the latest resources that different parties around the world have developed that are free to you, as well as a whole section that's called Covered Bond Basics. And you'll be able to see things I've written there, like 10 things you ought to know about covered bonds, as well as access to the publication. I told you there's nothing like it. It's worth hundreds of dollars, but you can download it free, and that's the European Covered Bond Council Fact Book. They update it every year, and the 2009 one is out there for you to poke through. And they actually have a section on the U.S. market. So please research to your heart's content.
Well, Mercy, I tell you, we've got 4 minutes or a little bit less remaining on the broadcast today. I tell you, there's just so much information. I want to jump back to Joe real quick. Joe, is there anything that we did not get covered in your questions of Mercy? And by the way, to our listeners, Joe's responsible for bringing Mercy on here for the program. We're just thrilled. I had the privilege of meeting Mercy many years ago and introduced her at a conference, and I was just amazed at her depth of knowledge and how she's just so articulate and going through all of this. And Mercy, and a lot of people are just saying, thank you, Mercy, for doing what you're doing. I don't know how you get compensated for this, but, I mean, it is just a tremendous service, and it's the emails are, if I could summarize so many of them, there's a lot of thank yous coming in, Mercy. There's a lot of, wow, I had no idea this is even going on. That's a theme of some of the emails that are coming in. We're getting emails saying, want to learn more. You've answered that question. And then there is, the question is, our government is hooked on stimulus. We're so fed up. There are a lot of free market economists out here, or those that have the free market bent. They're saying this looks like it's relief to that. And on one of your last comments, is this a solution to get the government off of, you know, constantly having that to stimulate our economy?
David, I want to thank that listener for raising this, because this is truly why I am such a strong advocate. It is one of our few options to bring private capital back into this market. And you and I know until we do that, it will not be as healthy as it can be. So absolutely, this will help bring private dollars back to funding mortgages.
Well, that's what we're about. We're absolutely for that, and I can't wait. Joe, we've got 2 minutes left. Do you have anything quickly? Do you want to add?
Well, I just want to add a thanks to Mercy and to say she's obviously very knowledgeable in this area. I don't even think I need to tell you she's a Harvard Business School MBA from Harvard Business School, has held senior management positions at Citigroup and Chase and Fannie Mae. So she is very knowledgeable in the secondary market and all aspects of mortgage banking, and we appreciate your efforts in pushing forward something that's very forward thinking.
Oh, my
pleasure. Good to have you. We've got to go to the exit here, and thank you so much. We'd love to have you back again and talk more. I think there's a lot more to be learned on this. Thank you so much, Mercy. Everyone, tune in next week. We'll be back with more on Lickin' on Lending, and important topics that are going to affect you and your future in the lending. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com.
Today's guests were Joe Farr and Scott Sanderson from MBS Quote Line, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.